Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Today's special edition, and I'm probably going to have to ask my mutual host to pronounce this correctly, because I know I'm going to get it wrong, but you know, we'll get to that in a second. You know, my plight into para jiu-jitsu is because I'm a para athlete myself. As most of you know, my love for the sport is beyond love. It devours who I am as an individual. But before I go any further, I'm going to ask my mutual host, Mr. Ronald Mann. You know, the show is called The Rebirth, but what in actuality is the real name that we've named the show? Because I'm not gonna chop it up, bro.
Thanks, Don. When you asked me to help you name this show, I was thinking about what jiu-jitsu and what para-jiu-jitsu in particular meant to me. And I'm learning Portuguese from one of my teammates now. And we were talking about, well, what happened when you lost your leg and what happened when you got into jiu-jitsu? And it truly was a rebirth. So we've decided to name the show Renascimento, and that means rebirth in Portugal, or in Portuguese, and that's a nod to our Brazilian foundation, our heritage.
Most definitely. You know, this thing has been just resonating in my heart. You know this, Ronald. You know, and I think this has to go with today's show. You know, I feel in life our eyes are useless if our mind is blind. And I've experienced that. I've lived that. I've walked that. You know, I've had to prove to myself, not to anybody else, but I had to prove to myself where my passion was embedded in life. And I think I truly have found my calling in life. And that is a man of the shadows, a man sharing the world. You know, when most of you think of jiu-jitsu, you think of these, you know, practitioners going out there. But when you want to look at the other aspect of it, the para aspect of it, you know, the world truly doesn't know the pride, the passion, the perseverance that is needed and consumed by these individuals and these practitioners just to even get out and step on that mat again. So with that being said, I'm going to welcome Cole Rogers and Rustin Hughes to the program. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Doing good, thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. You know, my first question actually is going to be for Cole. You know, Cole,
yes, sir.
You know, we understand, you know, you're a young man in life. You know, when this happened to me, I wasn't so young. But passion is something that is embedded in us. What did that passion bring out of you when you first were able to actually go out on the mat again? And how did you get that fulfillment from that first role?
Well, in my particular situation, I was actually born with a disability that I have. So I have all of my joints fused, which means that all the joints in my body are calcified and they don't bend. So I'm kind of locked in a seated position. My elbows are locked straight and my wrists don't have as much movement. So for me, martial arts was basically a way to give me confidence that I had never really had before in life. You know, just looking at myself and comparing myself to people and thinking, well, I'm not as strong, I'm not as able, it really hurt my self-efficacy. And it was only when I discovered martial arts that I was able to go out into the world and do other things in life that I couldn't do before just because I was lacking confidence. So for me, it really opened up a whole new world that I hadn't yet at that point experienced, I would say.
Yes, most definitely. I apologize for my lack of knowledge in the full extent.
No problem. Yeah, no problem.
But, you know, the thing that I found when I got my role with JW for the first time, it was like empowerment for me. It was like I found who I was. What does jiu-jitsu, you know, truly do for the heart and the mind of Cole Rogers?
Well, I think that ever since I was young, I've always looked up to warriors and warrior traditions, but I think one of the things that really gave me a lot of frustration was that because of my situation, I thought I would never be able to participate in these type of activities. And it wasn't until truly the moment, because I've been doing martial arts since I was a little kid. However, it wasn't truly until the moment that I went out onto the mat for the first time and had my very first match in Los Angeles with Ronald and with Rustin there at the same competition that I truly was able to feel or able to tap into that deep warrior tradition of combat sports and to feel, like you said, just empowered beyond anything I'd ever done before. Because for me, for a long time, I thought it was impossible. And like I say, jiu-jitsu can make the impossible possible, you know?
Yeah, amen to that, brother. You know, Ronald, before I hand it to you, I'm going to ask Rustin a question because it's something that has crossed my mind several times. I've asked some of the greatest professors in the world this, even Professor Yamasaki. You know, in para-jiu-jitsu, a lot of people, you know, have certain criteria or aspects the way they look at it. And I'm going to take a step back because I think Professor Jenna Bishop said it best, just even on the woman's side, feeling that inequality and, you know, some biased, you know, results to her just being a woman black belt in the art of jiu-jitsu. How hard has it been for you, looking in retrospect, you know, here you are forced to compete against able-bodied individuals, which you took on without any hesitance, any doubt, but what would it mean for you to have subcategories, to be in the Olympics? And I know I'm going against you, El Surly, but, you know, this is a question that I just need to ask, you know, because I want to get your train of thought. What does it mean for you to be able to have that aspect of the art presented to you without any hindrance or any people having, you know, social bias?
Well, it would be awesome because it would give direction to people right now that, I mean, to a kid that's not even born yet that have a disability, to the soldier who hasn't come back yet that is going to have a disability. It's going to give them focus from the beginning that they can train for the Paralympics for this. They can get involved in this. That's what I think. It's so much bigger than ourselves. You know, it's to try to get into the Olympics would just be amazing. To give people, you know, something to work for from the very beginning of an injury. Like when we're in Abu Dhabi, like one of the things that I took from Abu Dhabi was their terminology for the people that are disabled. They call them people of determination. And I thought that was a really cool way to look at it, especially to be born underneath that banner of a person of determination. So it's something that it's a lot more than us. It's a lot bigger than us.
Yes, it truly is. And, you know, my friends, and you know, I just want to let you know this is a show that truly means a lot to me because I am a para-athlete myself. So, I mean, there is some nervousness on my part, and generally I don't get nervous doing a show, trust me. Ronald will tell you, but I'm extremely humbled to have both of you on here, and this show is going to mean a lot to the art of jiu-jitsu, to para-athletes by the time we're done. But I'm going to toss the mic to Ronald Mann, as he's a para-athlete. He's competed in Abu Dhabi. He's been on my show. Ronald, here's your opportunity to ask questions of other para-athletes that compete with you, what their thoughts are. Go ahead, my brother.
All right. Rustin and Cole, my friends, good to talk to you again.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Always a pleasure.
So I want to look at both. The reason that I asked both of you to come on the show today, we've all competed together in a couple tournaments now, Los Angeles and Abu Dhabi. And so we've known each other's story a little bit, but it's unique that you come from two different directions on this. Cole, you were born with your mobility limitations, and
mm-hmm.
Rustin, you lost your leg right after the military?
No, it was it's going on. It'll be 4 years this year. It was a blood clot. I got out of the military in 97. And yeah, this happened in 2014.
Well, I wanted to thank you for your service, brother, as a fellow veteran.
Yes, we respect
and love our
thank
veterans
you.
On this family.
Both of you guys.
Cool. Yeah, you too, Ron.
So as a veteran, because I have my perspective of it as well, I lost my leg right after active duty in a motorcycle accident. And so from this end of it, we had our legs taken from us. And so as a veteran, as a jiu-jitsu practitioner, can you talk a little bit about how losing your limb affected you immediately, and then how the martial arts became your rebirth and how that helped you grow strong again after the military service?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so when I lost my leg, I went through two amputations in 3 weeks. I was 39, and it was August. I was 39. They took it below the knee. 2 weeks later, I turned 40, and then a week after that, they had to take it above the knee. At that point, I mean, I was devastated because everyone was just like, from the first surgery, it's like, oh, you know, good thing you're not an above the knee amputee. And then, you know, they're getting ready to, you know, cut my leg off again. I'm just like, wait a minute, what happened to thing you're not an above the knee amputee thing? So, I mean, it really, being 40 years old and having to relearn how to walk again. And then even, 2 years before that, I had lost my wife to brain cancer. And she had battled her brain cancer for 11 years. And then I was sitting there, like, especially after the second surgery, I was pissed. I mean, I was mad. I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Like, you know, so I was having a conversation with my upstairs, and I was just like, you know, you got to tell me, like, you got to give me a sign. Because, you know, I don't know if I can take much more of this. And from that, I developed a nonprofit called Be Bold. And how we kicked off our nonprofit is I rode a hand cycle from Fort Collins, Colorado to Omaha, Nebraska. And we raised money for another veteran whose family was dealing with brain cancer as well. And just from that, it gave me goals to get back, because I really couldn't do anything in the martial arts wise because I was on blood thinners. Then I got kind of tired of just riding a bike. I wanted to hit the heavy bag because there's just no better way to get some frustration out than hitting a heavy bag. And my buddy who owns a gym, he would pick me up on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I would go and I would hit the heavy bag and I'd relearn my balance again. I'd relearn everything again about how to hit the heavy bag. And then from that, I decided to take myself off the blood thinners and I started to compete in jiu-jitsu. And then from there, doing the jiu-jitsu is what really allowed me to take my disadvantages and turn them into advantages. Not having that part of my leg, it allows me to get into certain positions that people don't really know how to counter and get out of. When we get into weight classes, not having that part of my leg, I'm a lot bigger upper bodied people for my weight class. So, you know, finding the advantages and your disadvantages is, you know, it's something my coach told me to start to look for in my retraining again. And it's been a really fun way to get back into the whole martial arts again. In that, you know, in that vision of looking in that way.
And Rustin, I think you mentioned too that you were before on blood thinners, and if I'm not mistaken, you've since chosen to go off, right? So you can compete and all that.
Yeah, yeah. I've never been diagnosed. I had massive blood clot in my femoral artery, and the VA could never diagnose me with anything. I even went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and never had anything really diagnosed, and I was just like, you know, I'm in charge of my I'm in charge and I'm taking myself off the blood thinners, and still, you know, being monitored and everything is like, I'm not gonna just completely be done, you know. I will do this smart, but you know, I'm just gonna be done because it was a quality of life. You know, I'd rather have quality than quantity. At that point of where I was at, and that's what I still believe, is I would rather have that quality of life than a quantity of life, in a sense.
Yes, sir.
So, Cole, I'd like to ask you the same question. Now, you come from it with being born with limited mobility. So could you talk to us a little bit about how you, growing up, this has affected you and your mental status? And finally, when you got into the martial arts, what brought you into jiu-jitsu?
Well, basically, when I was growing up, as a very, very young kid, I didn't really have a lot of cares or worries. I didn't even really think of myself as necessarily being disabled, you know, because I was just born the way I was, and to me, that was the world. And it wasn't until I started going to school that I started really getting introduced to the idea of, like, oh, you're disabled, oh, you're disabled. And a lot of my parents and teachers told me, oh, Cole, it's okay to be disabled. It's okay to be disabled. And before I really, like, had questioned it too much, I just kind of thought, well, okay, that's fine. But then as I heard more and more, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call it bullying, but just kids noticing that I was different, you know, it started to affect me a little bit. And I think that martial arts was a key thing in helping me realize, or just asking myself a very important question of, one, is there anything truly about my physical situation that should stop me from doing anything in the world that I want to do? And the answer immediately was no. But then another question came to my mind. I was like, well, what about all the people that no matter what I did are still going to judge me or still going to think less of me? And all of a sudden, when I had jiu-jitsu in my life and martial arts in my life, it just didn't matter, because I knew that I had something that they could never take away from me, and that made me more happy than having, say, a million friends. You know, I'd rather have a couple close training brothers and sisters than be, you know, a super popular guy or anything like that. It just fulfills me a lot more at this point, you know?
Most definitely. You know, This show is quite touching and inspiring to me, because I listen to the words of you three gentlemen. I know the words of Ronald Mann from previous episodes, and a friendship that has since evolved. You know, I'm going to kind of share a little bit of who I am. Ronald already knows, you know, but this is what truly grew our brotherhood. You know, I had lost my leg. I'd contemplated suicide. I had a gun pretty much pulled to my head already, and was getting ready to end what I thought was misery. And, you know, my wife came in and threw down a camera and said, I pawned my wedding ring. You don't hear, quit feeling sorry for yourself. And those words right there truly set forth in my heart that never again will I ever feel sorry for myself. Will I understand why I was in that situation? No, but I would not feel sorry for myself. So I took to the sport that I'd so loved and been in for so many years. And what I found was I truly didn't know what living was. I thought I knew what life was. I didn't truly understand what life was, and I didn't appreciate it until I lost my leg. You know, Rustin, I'm a lot like you. I had first started off with my foot. They started removing parts of my foot because of gangrene, osteomyelitis. And so I went through multiple pins and rods and surgeries and, you know, and then ultimately below the knee amputation. And, you know, one day I was sitting there and I was supposed to be at the doctor's at 2 o'clock. I told my son to wake me up at 1. I woke up. It felt like I had wet the bed. I pulled the blankets back, and lo and behold, my arterial and femoral artery had an ulcer in it, and I had lost half my blood at this point. And my son picked me up and carried me to the sink. We called an ambulance, and they had to go in and remove more of my leg, remove the cadaver pad, and do a lot more. And so life began to be a hindrance for me. But then I realized, I still look back at certain criteria that developed me and made me the man I am today. Now, I'm going to start with you, Rustin, first. You know, I heard you kind of get a little emotional, And I'm that way today myself, even though I got to be the professional one here. But what was it like for you to realize that your life hadn't ended, but truly had just begun?
Well, I never realized it until I got with the nonprofit, in a sense, to where I could see where boxing was helping people, jiu-jitsu was helping people, not only socially, but getting off of medication and forming friendships, you know, like very strong friendships. And it was just to see other people benefit from it was that's when I for myself.
You know, it's truly profound to hear the words. You know, I'm going to jump over to Cole. You know, like Ronald said, you know, you were born, you know, like this, so you have a greater understanding than all of us truly do in this aspect. But for you, if you could, for me, describe your heart, because a shell is just a shell. But passion is what truly creates us. How did you allow that passion to truly create, you know, create the practitioner that you are today?
Oh, well, I mean, it's you know, Rustin's words really rang out to me just now, because for me it's the same exact situation. You know, I've always thought martial arts had really helped me out a lot growing up. I didn't initially start off in jiu-jitsu, but as soon as I started doing martial arts, I knew I wanted to at some point do jiu-jitsu. Just all the martial arts in general basically gave me this gift of confidence and being able to go out into the world. And basically what I tried, what I thought about doing was, oh, well, maybe one day after I, you know, have a career and maybe if I make enough money for myself, try to start a program for people, right? Other people with disabilities to learn self-defense. But all that kind of got kicked into overdrive a little bit about 3 years ago, when I had published some videos on YouTube of some of my martial arts practices and started to get a little feedback of people saying, hey, we want you to do more of this. We want you to do more of this. A specific group called Funker Tactical really got behind me and said, Cole, you need to give this some fuel. And I thought, well, I mean, I've been thinking of this name maybe for a little while called Fightability. And they're like, yes, that's perfect. Do that. So basically I just started a company called Fightability. And now our goal of our company is just to train any person with a disability completely free of charge, you know, because one of my biggest barriers growing up was coaches that looked at me and refused to work with me, because my first coach was awesome. He introduced me to it. And if it wasn't for him, I would never have gotten into it. But he had to stop teaching very quickly after I happened to get into martial arts. And so that left me, okay, I've got this passion, but now I need to find basically a new instructor. And it was at that point going out into the world that I felt what a cold place it could be for people with disabilities interested in fighting and martial arts and combat sports and things like that. And that was, I think, this initial spark that kind of drove this passion for me. And just the support that I got from sharing my story and publishing my videos of me doing martial arts was the fuel that really made me want to just build this fire of trying to get as many people as I can training. Like, I don't care if people have a disability, don't have a disability. I think that martial arts is for everyone, and that if everyone in the world at least tried martial arts, we would have a much, much happier society and live in a much, much healthier place.
Amen. You know, I'm going to ask one more question before I toss it back to Ronald. You know, I'm going to be the elephant in the room. I'm going to be kind of I'm not even going to say that word on here. I'm too humble to even say that word on here. But, you know, sometimes we look at life and there's hindrances, okay? And there's a certain aspect of the sport that just truly chaps me, you know, and that's that you're expected to, you know, compete against able-bodied individuals. You know, you're expected to go out there and perform as if you're, you know, Professor Ezra Lennon or, you know, Professor Jared Dopp. You go out and you compete and you do it with the greatest dignity, the greatest pride and humility. What do you think is holding the IBJJF back from allowing you to compete against each other in some categories of your nature and your liking? What do you think it's going to take for us to set a precedence and getting these organizations to recognize that you fought able-bodied, you know, practitioners? Now you're just asking for the equal opportunity to face each other. And I'll start with you, Rustin.
Well, I think that we need to form, we need to get our team established, I think. Once we get our team established, then we can get the numbers. Because Brazil, you know, they have, I think it's something like over 300 para-athletes. You know, that's a huge number. And even for just the training aspect, because like you were saying, like, we train against able-bodied people, and then it's very rare for us to go against another amputee. And then the only time that we ever get to really see him is during these competitions within the UAE. I don't know. I think it's a numbers thing. We need to get more numbers. We need to get more people interested. We need to let them know that it's available to them. I think a lot of people don't even understand that it's so available to them, and how much it will help them with, you know, just body movements. Understanding your new body. I believe it's a numbers thing at this point. We need to get more numbers here in the U.S.
Yes, I agree. You know, Cole, I'm going to pose the same question to you before I pass it to Ronald. What, in your thoughts and in your heart and sentiment, would you like to see the IBJJF, you know, take transition? You know, because as we spoke before, you know, with Ronald and with Al Surley and Professor Yamasaki, it took Rosa Parks to choose a seat on the bus that day to make a difference in the world. What do you think it's going to take for para-athletes to truly be heard and make that difference in the world, son?
I believe, and I hope to say this, you know, with the utmost respect and everything, but I think that if we build something better, the rest of the world will follow, if that makes sense. It's our job as para-athletes to train hard enough to compete on a level and to grow the sport to our other para-athletes to the point where the IBJJF have no choice but to recognize us, because at that point, para-jiu-jitsu is going to be so popular in the world that it would almost come off as like antiquated or I don't even know really the right word I'm trying to use, but it just would be almost be unacceptable for a major tournament to not have a para category. That's the world that I would like to see. And I think through us competing in these matches and through us continuing to train and trying to spread the words to others to train, we can do that, because I see in the slow-mo videos, I see from the tournament footage just what these para athletes are doing. And I'm telling you, it's things that has never been seen before in the jiu-jitsu world. And once that little spark catches the rest of the community, you're already seeing very, very amazing, you know, awesome people getting behind us, you know, the UAE, JJF, Henzo Gracie, you know, obviously, you know, His Highness Sheikh, you know, Zayed from the UAE has been incredible to us as para-athletes. But these amazing people behind us is just an example of what we are going to be able to do together, because like I said, I think it's just going to grow exponentially once we can get it out into, you know, the mainstream view.
Ronald?
Yeah, and that's just to piggyback off that. Cole was talking about they have over 300 registered para-athletes in Brazil right now. And I've talked quite a bit with El Surley Silva about this. In Brazil, para-jiu-jitsu is the norm. If you're training jiu-jitsu and you get hurt, you go right back into it. People that are born with disabilities, you go into jiu-jitsu. People that are in, you know, traumatic accidents, you go back to jiu-jitsu, because you don't need any kind of special equipment for it. When we get on the mat, we have to leave all that at the edge of the mat. Our walkers, our wheelchairs, our prosthetics, we take it all off and fight with just what our bodies are. I'd like to talk to Cole and Rustin right now about kind of going back into the para categories, I've had the opportunity to train and roll against both Rustin and Cole, and they're both amazing athletes. Cole has a cross collar choke that will pop your head off, and Rustin is just an animal walking around. Unfortunately, I've had the opportunity to get run over by both of them. Because we're so few as para athletes now, you know, we have 18 different categories established by the UAEJJF, and we're including autism in this. Where do you guys see yourself? We're fighting able-bodied people and win in able-bodied tournaments. Can you talk about a little bit what it's like to fight an able-bodied person compared to somebody that's in your para category? And then also, Cole, I saw you fought El Surly Silva and in UAE, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, about different, because he's quite a drastic different para category. Why did that
Indeed,
go down,
yeah.
And how did you feel about that?
Most definitely. Rustin, would you like to start, or should I get us going?
Actually, if you could, I'm going to go.
Cool. Yeah, I'll get us going. Yeah, no worries. Okay, so basically, I've competed against – oh, sorry, go ahead. I've competed against able-bodied competitors on just a few occasions, but to me, it was a thrill. It was amazing. But believe it or not, I've actually had a lot tougher of matches in the para category because of what Ron was just describing. There's not that many of us, right? So when I fight an able-bodied person, they throw me up into the lightest weight division, which is usually 125 to 135, depending on the tournament. Sometimes they have lighter weight divisions, but I haven't competed in any tournaments like that. And so I'm still going against somebody who's relatively close to my size. I only weigh about 95 pounds. However, day-to-day in the gym, I'm always going against guys that are 200-plus. You know what I mean? So for me, going against a 135 able-bodied guy is a lot more fun than going against, say, a 200-plus or even, you know, just a guy that's, say, 160 or 170 who's para, because that weight class does make a difference. One, the toughness of the athletes can make a difference, too. And three, just the fact that as para athletes, we're in there to win against each other because this is our division, right? Like, we've seen para athletes go and beat able guys, able-bodied guys multiple times. But what to me is important when it comes to like a worldwide ranking system and really the true spirit of competition is having things equal. So me as a warrior, Ron as a warrior, Rustin as a warrior, we don't mind going against an able-bodied guy. We don't mind going against a guy that's got 100 pounds on us. But when it comes to the championship match, we would like to have something that we can say, yes, we are either we are the champion of our category or no, we're not, because we want it to be fair in that category and we want it to be based on skill. And until we really can encourage everyone with a disability to train, like I said, in jiu-jitsu and everybody in the world, we might not have all those fair matchups that everybody deserves to have, you know?
Yes. You know, Ron, you kind of touched on something that just – are you still there, Ronald?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You kind of touched on something that, you know, well, Rustin dropped the line for a minute. He'll call back in a second. But, Cole, maybe both you and Ronald can explain for me, because I've never actually competed in a tournament. You know, I've had opportunities with J.W. Wright and, you know, Match Club Joplin and other facilities around the country that I shoot the seminars at. But what is that moment like? And I'll start with you, Cole, first. What is that moment? What does it feel like in the heat of battle, that moment where your competitiveness is at its rawest form? You know, I ask fighters what it's like to step in the octagon as I do an MMA show. Excuse me. But what is it like for you as a para athlete? Because you're not defined as a para athlete at that moment. You're just defined as a warrior. So
yes, sir.
What does that heat of the moment do? What does it instill in you as not just as a warrior, but as a man?
Well, I'll kind of, it kind of ties all of what we've been talking about today kind of ties into what you were just talking about, right? We talk about the idea of, we talked about earlier the idea of feeling sorry for oneself and how we don't ever want to feel sorry for ourselves. And one of the things that really stuck me, I believe it might have been Hickson Gracie, or I think it was one of the Gracies, said that when you do jiu-jitsu, you're like an animal out in nature, right? You're not thinking about normal everyday problems. You're just reacting to stimuluses, right? And that's all animals do. They don't think, oh, what am I going to do tomorrow? Or, oh, man, I wish I hadn't done that earlier. Animals live in every single moment, right? And when we as jiu-jitsu competitors finally get that moment where we're able to go out and compete, that to me is that moment of feeling, you know, like an animal basically. And it's an amazing raw feeling, you know, to tap into that natural fight or flight instinct and have to choose fight because you're at the competition that day and you prep for months and months and months and you don't want to go home with that silver. You want that gold, you know?
You know, I hope you don't mind me asking this question because it could go either way.
I'm an open book, brother. You're
asking,
all dead.
I'm asking from heart. At that heat of the moment, do you feel whole? Do you feel complete? Do you feel that there isn't any indifference?
See, this might sound maybe a little abstract to people, but in that moment, I feel nothing, and it's truly amazing. Because even thinking about that equity or thinking about wanting things to be the same, we're all human beings. We're all born with breath in our body. And to me, as long as you free yourself from caring about what others think of you and truly always go out and live to your realest and best self, then those other people's opinions don't matter. And so for me, I would rather just not be thinking about something like how I'm perceived by society. I would rather just be operating in the moment and living in a way, in a sense, beyond society. Because I talk about a lot the standards that society sets up for us, right? We watch commercials on TV. We're always getting thrown all this commercialism of just you have to buy this product, that product to make you skinny, to make you less ugly, you know, to make you, your hair not fall out. And that's just not life. We as a species developed under the most stressful and horrible conditions that people today would never even be able to imagine. And that, to me, is life, you know? So we have this amazing opportunity to be comfortable. If it was the old school days, to be honest with you, I would not have made it, you know? I would have died as a baby. But being born in this modern day, I'm able to not only tap into those old school human and animal instincts and traditions, but also to still have the opportunity to indulge kind of in our modern day society. So I think it's the duality of it that kind of helps me free myself a little bit from even worrying about how I'm perceived, you know, as a person, because like I was saying earlier, I know in my heart when we're done with what we're doing here, para jiu-jitsu is going to be on the world's eye. And I have no doubts in my mind about that. So whether or not the IBJJF, whether or not any organization wants to have para jiu-jitsu, whether or not I was the only para jiu-jitsu fighter in the world, I would still be pursuing it with as much passion as I have, because for me, it is truly, like I said, made the impossible possible.
Man, I love you, bro. I'm sorry. I love your enthusiasm and your train of thoughts. I mean, I'm going to be 53 years old on June 23rd, and Ronald will tell you, I don't admit this very much, but you know, you can teach an old dog new tricks. You can learn from the younger generation, and you truly have inspired that thought in me, bro. Ronald, I'm going to kind of paraphrase the question to you the same, but in a little different manner. You know, you had the normal life. You were able to, as I, know what normal existence is. And you and I both agree that we didn't start living until after we became, you know, a person with the loss of a limb. So as with Cole, what does that moment mean to you in the heat of the battle? What does it do for you as a man and as a warrior, but also knowing that somehow you've reproven yourself to yourself as a man through being a practitioner.
Well, that's, you know, when I lost my leg, I was just off active duty in the Army. And when I was on active duty, I won the Korea-wide Taekwondo Championship when I was stationed there. And so I'd fought in very high-level competitions prior to becoming an amputee. When I lost my limb, this is 23 years ago. They didn't have Paralympics, and amputees weren't on commercials. It wasn't cool to be an amputee, man. We were still kind of shut away and put back in the closet. And so at first, for me, it was about proving something to the rest of the world. And, you know, I had a huge chip on my shoulder. But as I began developing the martial arts and then went into MMA and started beating able-bodied people in MMA, you realize that it's no longer, you don't have to prove anything. Like, you've done it before. Just getting onto the mat on a daily basis, continuing to strive and fight for it, it sums up to be the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. You know, you're not going to win every fight. That's not what this is about. You know, it's about going out there and leaving my heart on the mat every single time I go out there and fight. And so now being able to have this pair of categories and being able to compete against my equals, I'll always fight against able-bodied people. That's just the nature of me. But being able to compete against somebody that's got an equal mobility limitation as I do, that's where I truly see my jiu-jitsu. You know, everybody adapts the game to their body, to their skill set, to their mindset. You know, everything in jiu-jitsu is adaptable. There's nothing that we can't do. You figure out a variation of the technique to get it done. And, you know, having to think under stress, under constant pressure of another guy, you know, riding 100 kilos on you, that comes up with innovation, but it also comes up and builds you in your character as a not only as a fighter, but as a human being. And that's what we talked about. You know, in Brazil, it's the norm for them to go back into jiu-jitsu. It's not as popular here in America yet. Realistically, we've only had jiu-jitsu in America for, what, 25 years, maybe? It will become the standard. Like, this, it is such a beautiful, you almost feel free. You know, it's hard to describe, but when I'm out there fighting, I don't hear the crowd. I can't barely hear the coaches. I flow. And the way Cole talked about it being an animal, like, it's the only way I can think of it is the way a tiger hunts. You know, he doesn't think about what he's going to do. He doesn't slap himself in the face. He doesn't get all pumped up and ready. He goes and he does and he kills. And that's when we're out there fighting, it's that purity. You know, right?
Yes. You know, my next question I'm going to pose to Cole, because Professor Silva really just impacted me, Ronald, as you know, and he kind of really completely did a 360 change in my thought, because, you know, this is all groundbreaking for us. You know, we're on worldwide, you know, radio right now. This is something that is going to continue. The fight of para jiu-jitsu and the para warriors is going to be something that is done week in and week out. The fight has just begun. But, you know, Cole, where I learned, and I'm willing to open up and say that I learned, you know, through this interview with Professor Silva, he told me to look beyond the disability and look into the art. Look into the beauty of the practitioner and what they bring to the sport. With that statement being made, what does that mean to you?
Oh, it rings out totally with what I've seen and done through my jiu-jitsu career. Because, like I kind of mentioned earlier, us as para jiu-jitsu athletes, we're pulling, and Rustin mentioned as well, we're pulling moves that have never been done before, never been created before, because we're the first person with these bodies to try jiu-jitsu, right? So in a sense, we're almost creating our own jiu-jitsu for ourselves that's completely unique to us, right? So that's what we get out of it. But then it's our job and our goal to take that benefit that we've gotten from our personal jiu-jitsu and then help other people develop their personal jiu-jitsu as well. Because earlier I kind of mentioned, oh, when I'm in a competition, I don't see the inequality. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist out there, right? Some people have told me in the past, like, Cole, never try and fight to prove a point, right? Never try and fight to prove yourself. And in a way, they do have a point, like that I should never go out there trying to fight for other people. It should always be for myself. But the fact of the matter is that while things still are unequal, I have to keep going out and fighting because I owe it to the next generation for things to be equal for them. Because although I've, like I was saying earlier, am willing to, like I said, go against able-bodied people, I'm willing to go against somebody who's out of my category, I'm willing to do anything because I love the sport and I love all of this stuff, I don't necessarily think that everybody should have to. And I think that it's our job to open up the doors for, like I said, the rest of the world. And then once that happens, we can do pretty much, you know, anything at that point. Obviously, we're still going to be on the mat. Don't get me wrong. You know, jiu-jitsu is a lifelong passion. But we will, at that point, have nothing more to prove. And when people say, oh, you don't have to prove anything, that might be true. However, I kind of think that those people might have never lived in a truly unequal situation, you know. And until you do live in those shoes, you kind of see, okay, well, maybe there is some work to be done. Maybe I do still have a mission out there. Maybe just because I'm okay with some of these things doesn't mean the world should be okay with it. And just because I've put up with certain things doesn't mean the next generation has to at all.
I don't think you could have correlated that any better, brother. I mean, you know, I'm learning a lot from the show, and it's going to help me into, you know, moving into future episodes and future para athletes. You know, the true thing that is the reason why I'm doing this is because I know the indifferences in life. I know what it means like to have people point a finger at you and laugh and say, you know, harsh and cruel things. And, you know, I know what it's like to feel that indifference. But in reality, and Ronald knows where I'm going to, I bet you he knows where I'm going to go with this. I found this out as a practitioner myself that, and you had brought it up, that there are moves that that para-athletes are doing that the sport has never seen before. You know, I found to my advantage, and you know, and I don't mean to chuckle when I say this, but I found this to my advantage that being an amputee, that I'm allowed to bring my leg up in certain places where others couldn't. I'm allowed to position myself on the mat and get an unfair advantage. You know, so with you going against able-bodied people and having that unfair advantage towards them because you can manipulate your body into certain criteria that a normal person couldn't, would you say that being, you know, if the IBJJF allowed para categories, that it would allow you as a practitioner to step your game up because that advantage will be taken away?
Hey, Cole, give just a second real quick. Don,
yes,
could you call Rustin back? He got disconnected and is trying to get through as we speak. Could you give him a call real quick while Cole answers
this? I could call him. I could call him.
Thanks.
Right now. Hold on. You just asked me, Ron. Come on, bro.
And should I
got
to
wait
until
the break in conversation. Cole, if you can go ahead and answer that.
Yeah, most definitely. Wait, sorry, can you – or I hear Rustin coming on, I think, right now.
We'll get him and then I'll ask a question.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Rustin, we got you back on.
Welcome back.
I'm going to finish asking Cole this question,
no
and I'll
so
get
back. So basically,
you know.
For me, it – for me, I'm still doing the jiu-jitsu that I'm doing every day anyway. But, yes, most definitely. Like you said, if there are more para tournaments, it's certainly going to drive the level of competition much higher. And everybody is going to have to meet that. And like you said, more and more techniques are going to be developed as a result. And we won't have necessarily some of those little sneaky advantages that we had of, oh, this person doesn't know our move. But that will make it our responsibility to make all of our moves, the transitions for the next move and the transitions for the next move perfect, because it won't just be one bread and butter move anymore. You know, it's going to be a complete system by the end of this. for every person, no matter what their situation is.
Yeah. Before I pass the mic to Ronald, I'm going to ask Rustin, since you just joined us, I'm going to ask you the same question. You know, me and Ronald discussed this on previous shows. As you know, I'm a practitioner. I have found myself being able to manipulate my body, as Cole has talked about, into positions that the normal body can't. So when we go against able-bodied, you know, practitioners, you know, we kind of get that slight advantage, you know. But, you know, like I proposed to Cole, if the IBJJF creates a paracategory, do you feel that advantage that you have now against able-bodied practitioners will be taken away as other para-athletes, you know, ascertain the same skills as you?
Yes and no, because I also think that jiu-jitsu is your own self, you know, like even being an able-bodied person, one person's game is going to be completely different than another person's game. So it's just how you can implement things into your game. So, I mean, it's also like Cole was saying, you're probably going to have to step up your game a little bit. You know, you're going to have to change some things up. But, yeah, I mean, I think it will and it won't, you know, like, you're just going to, because, like, even at the gym right now, people get used to some of the things that I do, and I have to change it up a little bit. You know, I have to get crafty, I have to find some new things to do, because they pick up on it.
Most definitely. Ronald?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Cole and Rustin both about this, since you're coming from two different avenues. Rustin, as a veteran and as somebody who was involved and didn't have a choice of losing a limb, it was taken from you. How do you feel, like we said in Brazil, this is the norm. People go into jiu-jitsu if they have some sort of mobility limitation. What do you feel is going to take here in America for able-bodied people, and even more important, I think, veterans coming back? We've seen all the studies on veterans' PTSD and how jiu-jitsu is helping that. How are we going to make this the standard and the norm in America? And, Cole, when you get your shot, could you please talk to it about, say, somebody's from, you know, they're born and raised with mobility limitations, and how do they get the families educated so they immediately take their children into jiu-jitsu?
Well, I think if we could get the PA on board with this, that would be huge to get where the VA are sponsoring programs of jiu-jitsu. I mean, I had a meeting last week with the Denver VA, and I don't know how far it's going to go, but you know, they were really interested in the whole adaptive boxing and the whole para jiu-jitsu and you know, everything that, because it fits the more modern veteran. A lot of the programs that we have, they're really not what the guys that are coming back want to do. And I think that's one of the biggest things is, you know, having an activity that, one, it's therapeutic. It's also, you find that camaraderie again that you did when you were in. I mean, it's the closest thing to a platoon I've ever had. I don't know. I think if we can get the VA on board and the money that would get put into it by the VA, then everyone else would just follow.
Yeah, and I'll segue kind of off that. In my, like we were just kind of talking about, kind of from my perspective, my experience in coaching and trying to help others become on the same path. I'm not a coach because I'm not that level of instructor, but I would consider myself to be kind of like someone who could at least help guide another para athlete into the sport. Is that we need to start people young, basically. You know what I mean? Because as you watch the brain develop and as you watch the body develop, that's where the most work can be done. And I always think back, and I try to never have any regrets, but I kind of think about it, wow, what if I could have trained the way I train today when I had first discovered martial arts in eighth grade? Or what if my parents would have been told by someone, oh, your son has these things going on. Well, martial arts is great for that. If I had started since I was, say, 4 or 5 years old, what an impact it could have made on my body and on my mind. That's what I would like to see, is a way for it to become the norm, you know what I mean, for parents and for families and for schools, you know what I mean? I would like to see jiu-jitsu being taught in school. I think that that would reduce so much of the problems we're seeing with bullying. I think that would reduce so much of the problems that we're seeing with kids just dissociating on their devices, because no matter how much you love your phone, you got to leave it on the side of the mat if someone's going to try to choke you out, you know what I mean? And that is just something that our youth just doesn't really have access to. You know, you see high school wrestling programs being cut all across the nation, you know what I mean? And it's just sad to me, because I've felt these benefits and had these experiences that the combat arts can give. And I think that people need to stop worrying about what martial arts might do to them and start thinking about what martial arts can do for them.
I love that. I truly love that. You know, Rustin, I got to ask you a question, because when I heard you speak of it, your heart truly came out. You know, you brought up your nonprofit called Be Bold. You know, empowering people with disabilities through martial arts is a tremendous aspect. But what does it truly mean for you to play a pertinent role in this, in the development and the creation of the future of empowering this, these people in this aspect? Did we lose him?
Oh, no, I'm here. I just feel rewarding to be able to do it, you know. I think it's, you know, some people may be rich financially, but I think that I'm going to be rich, you know, through experiences and through friendships. And that's the way I kind of look at it, is this is just an awesome experience to be a part of, to show people, like, to never, I know it sounds cliche, but never to give up and to keep moving forward and, you know, just keep doing it, because I don't know, you know, it's just been an awesome experience to be a part of this. And I believe it's kind of been my mission, you know. It's like something that I was supposed to do. I was supposed to go through this.
You know, I understand that so much more than you would. I think we all understand that train of thought. And that's what the show is about, to share with the world. And while you were gone, like I told Cole, this is going to be a weekly show. This is something that I've chosen in my heart to do. And when I set forth to do something, sharing the world is what I'm best at. You know, I'm going to pose kind of the same question to you, Cole. You know, in fightability, you offer free training to anybody with a disability. But I'm sure you would offer free training to anybody, period, because that's the type of individual you are. What type of message does this allow you to share with the world through your public speaking? How does it impose, how would you say that the society takes and you impose your thoughts on them? How do you feel you're changing and making a difference in this aspect?
Oh, yeah, well, I think it all, I kind of tie it together in this way. It seems like we were all meant to do, like, kind of like Rustin was saying, it seems like we were all meant to do this. Kind of a little side story that leads into what I'm trying to say, and I apologize if it's noisy. I'm kind of in a parking lot. I was headed from L.A. Back home to Northern California where I live. But basically, Rustin and I met by accident. Or maybe not by accident, but it wasn't. We didn't purposely meet. We met at an organization called No Barriers, and they do a summit every year where they offer tons of adaptive rec programs. And that year, Rustin was teaching a TRX class, and I didn't know what TRX was, but I just saw it on the list, and I thought, that looks kind of neat. I'm just gonna choose this class. You know what I mean? Because I was just picking classes that I wanted to do that weekend, and all of a sudden, I show up to this class. And here's this dude, like, where I thought we were just going to be doing this TRX thing. I looked it up a little bit and looked into it. All of a sudden, he's pulling out gloves and mitts. And I'm like, okay, that, I could vibe with this because I've boxed, you know, since I was a kid practically. And it was that moment kind of that to me set, like, first Rustin and I, and then Rustin helped me meet Ron. And it's just all these moments coming together that just kind of, to me, shows me why I'm trying to do this. You know what I mean? Like, shows me why when nobody shows up to class, or when, like kind of Rustin was mentioning, what we're doing doesn't really always pay the bills. You know what I mean? When funds are low, I still think about those moments, like Rustin and I had at the No Barriers Summit, like we've had at these competitions, like I've had just showing a new student for the very first time in their life, you can hit something, you can control somebody, you can, like Ron was saying, leave your wheelchair on the side of the mat. It's those moments, I think, that define this whole lifestyle, and it's those moments that help us always carry forward when the going gets tough.
I like that. You know, Ronald, it's kind of a humbling experience that you brought these two gentlemen to share somewhat. I mean, we're not done yet, but just to hear the other aspect of what we're doing, it truly is profound, because it's not stereotypical to have conversations like this in my life, because, you know, for a long time I felt like I was truly alone. And brother, you have shed a path in my world through our friendship that has allowed me to see that this is just the beginning. This, like you said, this is the rebirth. And I think it's a truly tremendous day for me in my life. Gentlemen, excuse me, I never get humbled on the show. Last year I interviewed 620-something fighters in the sport, plus I'm an active photographer. So to hear your words and your knowledge just truly has humbled me. You know, Ronald, what does it mean, and then you can go ahead and ask your questions after this, but what does it mean for you to finally know that there's a platform for para-athletes through our show now, and what does it mean for you going into the future yourself as a competitor?
To me, para-jiu-jitsu is a gift, and it's been given to me through instructors, through friends, teammates that I consider my family. It's helped me elevate my life. It's not just a martial art. It's a way of life for me. And, you know, I've met, in just in the last year, I've only been doing para tournaments for 13 months now, 14 months. And in just in the last 14 months, I've made so many new family and friends across the globe that are para fighters as well. That doesn't even count the able-bodied people that I've been able to connect with. So, you know, it really brings us up to the next level of who we are as family, as elevated people. You know, we all find one common ground, and that's the martial arts, and we're talking about jiu-jitsu in specific. And to be able to see people with different ability levels, different ages, you know, different mindsets, all come together on one mat, that's what I love about jiu-jitsu. It doesn't matter what your politics are, what your ability level is, you know, who you're married to. The mat doesn't lie. It accepts all of us, and we're all family when we go there. And so that's what I see. Like, over this last year, we've started to really develop crew here in America. American para fighters are starting to come together and unify as one force, and show the rest of the world that this is American para jiu-jitsu. And not only does it show the rest of the world, but it shows our own people that this is a good path, a good life path. And, you know, for me to be able to help form that and help guide it and be a part of it, that's probably the greatest honor I've had in my life. And, you know, I get to meet people like you, and then catch up and meet new people like Rustin and Cole. These guys are changing my life. They're changing how I think and how I live.
Amen.
I applaud all of you. You know, Ronald, I know that you've got, because hell, I'm a para-athlete, and I got 20 million questions still proposing through my head, but I'm going to go ahead and let you ask a couple more questions because, I mean, we could be on the show for hours because the depth of the topic is real. I mean, it's a life. It's something that we all accept and we're trying to share with the world. But go ahead and ask your brothers in arms your questions, and then when you're finished, I'll jump back on.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and ask this last one from both you and Rustin and Cole. I just wanted to, if you could relive, like, your experience, your emotions, your feelings, your passions, when all three of us were in L.A. for the first time. I think back to we had that Airbnb that Sabrina Riesling helped us hook up. And we didn't have any mat space. There was nothing there. There was a concrete floor in a garage area. And we all the para-athletes were coming together that went out to L.A. And we're like, hell, we want to train. So we just threw sheets down on the ground and grabbed each other and started rolling. And we did that every single day. And that to me is one of the highlights of my life right now. If you guys kind of run over, like, how that felt for you to be in L.A. for the first time and have these major tournaments that are starting to pop up all over the world now.
Go ahead, Cole.
You want to start us off? Oh, okay. I'll start. So basically, for me, going to that tournament, I've talked a lot. I've used the terminology a couple times today, a spark, right? Because I talk about love a lot. I do some motivational speaking and stuff like that. I talk about love being a fire that burns within us all, right? And the hotter your fire burns, the more love you're spreading out into the world, the more love you're going to be receiving, right? And so it was through that experience that kind of created the spark of my love for para jiu-jitsu. Because like I said, I've always been a lifelong martial artist. You know what I mean? Like, if they've got a competition for it and they'll let me sign up, I'm probably willing to do it. You know what I mean? There's a few things that I'm not willing to do. But the para jiu-jitsu in particular really gave me something new that I hadn't before. And that was kind of like what we talked about, was just an honest, completely honest and unabashed competition ground for me to display what all these hours and hours and hours that I've done in the gym behind the scenes means to me, how to express my martial arts and then hopefully inspire, like we've talked about, also other people to do the same. So for me, that moment of LA was like the moment of like, wow, I owe this same moment to the rest of the world, because if I had never experienced it, my life would just be lacking one more spark in it. And I think that those moments are what truly define us as people. You know what I mean? It's not driving to the bank. It's not getting up in the morning and brushing our teeth. It's when we fight alongside our brothers and sisters, when we form bonds through hard work, and when we just express our love to people, whether it's through combat or through a hug or through a friendly conversation on the subway. It's those moments that define what real life is. It's not, like we were talking about earlier, the materialism. It's not about how we look. It's about how we love one another as human beings. And to me, jiu-jitsu is nothing but love.
Right on.
Cool.
For me, LA was the first time I'd ever traveled by myself after my amputation. So it was like there was a lot of firsts in that trip, you know. And then another thing that I thought was really cool is that there were like seven of us in the house, maybe more. I think seven, nine people, and we all got along. You know, it's very rare that you can take that many people from all over the different, you know, over the country and bring them together, and everyone got along. And then another thing that I thought that I remember was remember the motorcycle wreck out front of the Airbnb?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And damn, dude, I forgot about that.
Everybody snapped into attention and took on a role, and everybody was out there doing something. Ron was a combat medic, so he was evaluating the situation. Langston was out directing traffic. You know, I think me and John were on the phone with the ambulance. You know, I mean, we all took part of something, and to be able to work like a well-oiled machine like that when we just had met, I mean, I think it says a lot about the energy that was there, that we connected very well. And it was an awesome experience. And then just to be a part of it, there's a photo of all of us in front of the banner. And that's one of the photos that I always remember. And I think it's something that people will look back on that. And we're going to be the pioneers of para jiu-jitsu in the United States. And that photo right there will be the people that are showcased in it, I think.
Yes.
Most definitely. You know, the thing that is tremendous for me is, you know, to be able to not just share the voices of para jiu-jitsu, but to share your stories. You know, I'm going to ask Cole first, and then I'll ask you, Rustin. You know, Ronald's probably heard this question before, but I think it's imperative that I use this question on this show because it helped me in my plight. But, you know, sometimes we get that reflection of life, whether it be walking by a car window or looking in a mirror or even a puddle, in, you know, in a pathway in a park. Sometimes we look down and we see ourselves and we get a reflection into our life and who we are. With that being said, Cole, what do you see?
Well, it's interesting you ask that because sometimes, like you said, you look at yourself in the mirror and a moment ago you were just thinking about nothing. And then all of a sudden you see yourself and it's like, oh, I guess I do look different than everybody else does, right? But then you kind of have to ask yourself the next question, you know, does it really matter? And to me, the answer always has to be no, because like I'll meet people on the street and stuff like that who – say they have a disability and yeah, like I see their disability. To me, they don't look like an able-bodied person, but when I'm having a conversation with them, I'm still getting the same passion and the same interaction that I am from anybody else. So to me, it's almost silly that I am forced to have some of the conversations that I have to have with other people who don't necessarily get it, who are always trying to see my situation in a negative light, and they're like, oh, this must be so hard for you, this must be so hard for you. And it's like, I mean, is life easy for anybody? And if your life is easy, are you pushing yourself hard enough? You know what I mean? That's what I ask. And it's just kind of like those moments where I am able to reconcile all that, you know, and go in that full circle of like, whoa, I guess I do look different too. So what, you know? So what? Who cares?
I love it, amen. You know, Rustin, when you get that opportunity to look into the mirror, you get that reflection. What do you see, brother?
I see a guy that's been through a lot, and also I'm not gonna stop. You know, like I plan on doing this for a very long time. I'm going to turn 44 this year, and I feel younger than ever. And there's nothing better than going out there and rolling with somebody that's 20 years younger than you and then just, you know, there's nothing better than this sport. It makes you young. But, yeah, I think that I've seen a guy that's been through a lot, and I also think that, you know, sometimes I believe I was more disabled before I lost my leg. And I believe that disability was between my ears. And, you know, now it's kind of like all that stuff has just been taken away because it's just like, you know, just go out there and live life, you know. It's like you've gone through a lot and just do it, you know. Like we don't have a lot of time on this planet anyways. And if you're so hesitant, you know, you're going to miss out on so many things. And, you know, just find something that that you're very passionate about and that keeps you up late at night and gets you up early in the morning.
So right,
yes, sir.
I love myself more now than I did before I lost my leg. I mean, just being honest, man. You know, I used to pity myself and I used to let what others say hinder me, and you know. At a certain point in time, I realized I'm more beautiful now than I ever was. And I know a lot of people probably don't understand that, but I know you three gentlemen do, you know, because...
Yes, sir.
Beauty is what we create. Beauty is what we instill. Beauty is not just the pathway that we create for ourselves, but what we create for others. And you're so right, Rustin. We're pioneers in a movement that has just begun. We're pioneers in a movement that I will not stop fighting for until justification is given on all aspects, on all platforms, because we are no different. We are one. You know, that's the one thing that's tremendous about practitioners to begin with is the art of jiu-jitsu, you don't get paid as a practitioner, so it truly has to be pride, passion, and perseverance that took you there and determination that kept you there. You know, it's an art that we all love, but to be able to take it into the para aspect doesn't define the sport. You define the sport, because what you're doing is creating avenues for people that have no path in life. You're giving them guidance. You're showing them that no matter how, you know, inadequate they feel or if they can't do something, now you're showing them a path of accomplishment. And money can't buy that. Money can't buy passion. Money can't buy sharing the knowledge and giving others opportunities in their plight to become a person in life. And that's what you gentlemen have done on my show today. That's what Ronald Mann has done in my show and in my life. And I'm truly honored that all three of you have allowed me to be a voice in this aspect. You know, I got one more question before I let you all go. You know, if there was a statement that you could make to the young kids who were either born with a disability or faced a disability at a young age, what would your thoughts be about them going outside of the box, as we all have, and finding that passion, finding that dream? And I'm going to start with you, Rust.
Well, I think that, you know, you can do anything that you put your mind to. And honestly, I never believed that at first. You know, I thought it was just a saying that people say. But then when you actually get put into a position where you have to actually start practicing it, it becomes true. You can do pretty much anything that you put your mind to. And that's one thing that you can, if you do it in jiu-jitsu, then how it can just platform off of other things in your life, in your professional life, in your friendship, you know, and, you know, in your, with your girlfriend, your wife, your kids, just your friends, everybody else. You know, it's one of those deals where, you know, it's a lifestyle. I think we've said it before. It's a lifestyle. Yeah.
It truly is. Cole?
Mm-hmm. I would just say to anyone out there, you are perfect just the way you are, and you can do it. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying that anyone is going to give you anything, but I'm saying that you, on your own, the human being that you are, the body that you possess, and the skills that you have and have the ability to acquire, you can do it, and you should never give up. That's what I would say.
Amen, brother. Amen. Ronald?
You know, Rustin, Cole, and I were in Abu Dhabi on April 21st of this year for the second world tournament for the UAE JJF Para Tournament. And the day before the tournament, we were warming up and using techniques and talking about rules, and the entire, all 61 fighters from around the world were there together. And unbeknownst to us, Mario Spiri and Enzo Gracie were there. And they came to speak to us before we went out to fight. And the one thing that it chokes me up now to even think about it, Enzo Gracie said, when he was talking about us as fighters, that we've come there to show the world, he said, impossible is nothing. And we're proving that. We can do whatever we want. We can go any place we want. we have no limitations except the limitations we place on ourselves. And if we continue to fight and strive for anything we want, it can be achievable.
I love that. You know, to my listeners on iHeart and Univision, you know, if this show touched you, the more downloads that we get for this episode, the more it will air out on worldwide radio consistently next week as it'll be put into the rotation. You know, I've never truly asked this of my listeners, you know, before, but download, share this episode, make this show greater than any other show that I've ever had, because this is just the beginning of the step and the walk into this, you know, aspect of prayer jiu-jitsu. We will change the world. You know, gentlemen, it truly has humbled me, and this is just the start. You know, Ronald, you're a tremendous aspect in my life, and I'm so honored that you joined my life. This show truly has, you know, humbled me. I apologize to you, gentlemen. I wasn't on point today because I didn't expect this to truly enlighten my heart like it has. I'm truly blessed for each and every one of you because you truly are warriors. You know, I'm going to hand the mic to each and every one of you and let you give your sponsor shout-outs, your friends and family, your social media, or just anything else you would like to add to the program. I'll start with you, Rustin, but before I do, I just want to say it was truly an honor and a privilege for me to share your voice with my listeners in the world. I'm so humbled, brother. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Don. I really appreciate you just allowing me to tell my story. You know, it's one thing that I never thought that, like, my story would actually kind of be meaningful or anything like that, but... I'm just glad that I can share my story with other people out there, and hopefully they can just change the way people think about what their ability is. But yes, anybody wants to check out what we got going on, they can check out on Facebook, Be Bold. That's my nonprofit. We help people with disabilities get into adaptive sports. I also have my Rustin Hughes Adaptive Athlete page. But thank you so much for allowing us to just speak and just tell our story and hopefully get the word out there. Thank you.
Hey, man, you don't got to thank me, brother. I'm the one that should be thanking you. You know, you'll get to know me in life, trust me, and you'll understand that thought. But, Cole, the floor is yours, my friend.
Thank you so much. Yeah, obviously, you know, definitely we're all very grateful to you. Don, you know, you're being humble, but without folks like you that have access to larger audiences out there getting behind us fighters, we can't do it on our own. So we really appreciate that. If you guys wish to check out my social media, you're welcome to. My Facebook page is Fightability. Think about disability, take the diss out and put fight in. You got Fightability. I try to share motivational videos and pictures of other people training, as well as keep everybody up to date with what I'm doing with my students, my classes and all that stuff as well. My Instagram is Cole Avalos, A-V-A-L-O-S, Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S. And I just want to give a very, very big thank you to my coach, Preston Scharf, because if it wasn't for him, you know, I wouldn't have all the skills and the toughness that I have that even just got me through the plane ride to Abu Dhabi, much less, you know, the competition itself. So I want to give a really big, you know, shout out and much love to my coach, Preston, because he's been a big influence. And I just want to end my little part here by just changing the tone of things for just one moment and talking to the naysayers out there a little bit. We've talked about the passion a lot today. We've talked about how amazing it's been in our lives, but I still think that there's some people out there that are skeptical, right? Even folks that are disabled themselves maybe might think of jiu-jitsu as, oh, well, what if I get hurt? I can't do it because of this. I don't want to embarrass myself. I'm not. Whatever your excuse is, I just want to share just one experience that I was able to have over the weekend. I was asked to come to UCLA here in Los Angeles, where I'm just leaving now, to talk at an event, the first ever event that they've done of its kind. It's called the Martial Arts and Wellness Symposium. So basically the whole theme of the event was how does martial arts benefit human beings beyond just the aspects of wanting to fight or just beyond self-defense, or what are the restorative aspects? So throughout the entire day, I heard from neuroscientists, child behavioral experts, gym owners, club leaders, principals, heads of school districts, and I was luckily able to talk about my experience as well. And the culmination of all of it was, you know, like I said earlier, we've talked about the love, but let's just for a second talk about the science behind it. Martial arts is proven to impact not only your mind, body, but your spirit as well. We are now able to quantify through studies that they're doing at UCLA what parts of the brain are being triggered by what exercises. And I'm sure it's no surprise to you, when you look at martial arts, the brain activity and the waves in different parts of the brain skyrocket past that of any other what they would call, like, say, a normal anaerobic exercise, like running on a treadmill or throwing a ball. It's proven scientifically what these things can do for us. And if all of us para-athletes can start to just not only take our time to train, but to spread our message and to help these universities study what we're doing more and more and more, we can just help more and more people. Because I think that while we all have experienced the love and we're spreading that to people, what it's really going to take for mainstream society to get behind it is the science. And now all that's becoming available, and I think it's a truly incredible time for the martial arts as a result of that. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, hey, before you know, I toss it over to Ronald. You know, I truly get that, because that's the kind of the message that I was kind of trying to convey earlier when I said that my work became more passionate after I lost my leg. I had truly believed that my life is a better place. But, you know, you want to talk about it heightening the aspects of who you are, your abilities, and things of that nature. My best work came after the loss of my limb. And, you know, I've been through 220-plus surgeries in my life, and I've been given several death sentences.
Wow.
But yet the passion that my body has allowed myself to, you know, portray or live has been heightened tenfold, because the sheer willingness to prove my body wrong to myself and to to show others that, you know, just because I may be, you know, I've lost a limb, I may have been through this, it doesn't change what I am as a man. And it proved to me that I can climb the cage with some of the best in the business at 20 years old, and here I am in my 50s. But what it did was it showed me the world through a different spectrum. It allowed me to see past the objects I saw before. So it gave me that creativity, that extra essence of who I am, and allowed my brain to quantify the aspects of a level I don't think I've ever would have been in before if I hadn't lost my leg. So I thoroughly understand where you're coming from, brother, and I think that's a message that we can share in the next chapter when we have you on the show again, because this is just the beginning. So
yes, I would love to
go
more into it, for sure. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, that's the deep aspect I love, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would
love
to go there with you.
Yep.
But, Ronald, I'm going to pass the mic to you, because I know you got some sponsors, some friends and family, and some social media that you want to share, and then I'll come back with a final message for all three of you, and we'll end the show.
Yeah, well, Fightability and Be Bold, both of those foundations have really inspired me. Because Cole and Rustin work together quite often doing these adaptive martial arts clinics. And I'd like to see that spread a little bit more. I mean, when you see the pictures that they're sending back of people who've never done anything martial arts related, the joy that they have on their face. Rustin and Cole are doing such amazing work bringing people into these sports. I got to thank my Yamasaki family. You know, they're my main partners here, and they take care of me and teach me the way of jiu-jitsu and have helped me elevate my life. And through that, I get Dark Horse Supplements and Dropy that they keep me on the mat. I'm old man jiu-jitsu now. You get to be my age, you got to make sure you take care of yourself. Unfortunately, I've got some good people from Dropy and Dark Horse that are helping me out. But, Don, I got to thank you again, man. Like, you're allowing this to happen, and you invited me to be part of it. And it's truly a gift and honor. And I really appreciate what you're helping us do. Like Cole said, we can be out there and fighting and banging and win championships, but without a voice for us, it doesn't go anywhere. So thank you, brother.
Hey, man. Like I said earlier, I'm the one that needs to thank you guys because, you know, I could do MMA shows all day. I could do boxing shows all day. And to be honest with you, I would rather do a show that is part of who I am. I'd rather do a show that exemplifies the man I am in my walk. And you guys allow me to share my story, but through your aspect. And that's a win-win in my eyes, you know. So it goes back, before I let you all go, it goes back to what I said in the beginning of the show. If our minds are blind, then our eyes are useless. So now when you look back at this whole show and you look at that statement, it truly analyzes and put the show in the perspective. Because, you know, people are quick to judge, but they're not quick to understand. And life truly is a much more better place than society portrays it or perceives it. I thank each one of you gentlemen for coming on and sharing your stories. This is the first of many. I would love to have all of, well, Ron, you're going to be my mutual host, but, you know, to Rustin and Cole, I would love to have you back on and share the next chapter of your story, because this is just beginning. I'm truly honored and humbled to have you on. And on that note, I want to thank all of you for joining me and sharing your stories with my listeners and the world. This truly humbled me.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, Don, real quick, can I just give a shout-out to my sponsors?
Yeah, buddy.
I totally forgot. Trials MMA, my family there, my coaches, Ryan, Steve, Graham, Jared, my supplement sponsors, FRM, Pure Kind Botanicals for my CBD oils, Kind Care, Bee Nails, and Gray Rock Windows and Doors. I couldn't do without those guys. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Don. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. And before I let you guys know, just to let you know, if you go back and hit that link, to the far right of the play button is a download button. So you can download the episode. I never delete the link. I just archive my links, so the show will always be out there for you to present and let others listen and share with family. That link is completely shareable that I gave you. You can share it a million times. It'll never go away. I believe that people's stories should be kept and not deleted. So this show will never be deleted is what I'm getting at. So for future reference, if you want to listen to the show, it'll always be there. If you want to share it, it will always be there. On that note, thank you all for joining the show, and let's make history together.
Thank you, Don. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
God bless each and every one of you. You know, today's show truly humbled me, you know.
I truly don't know. I apologize there. One mic died on me as the battery kind of died. But I truly don't know how to express the gratitude that I have for these gentlemen sharing their stories on the show today. It truly blessed me, as I'm a para-athlete. I'm an amputee. And, you know, we really are no, you know, different than anybody else. Actually, we have to strive that much harder to create a purpose and show our intent. On that note, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. This show should truly humble you because it's what your organization is truly all about. Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch-Duran and Juan Ramirez. Truly humbled and honored that a legend such as yourself would back my show. Last but not least, my main man, Mr. Joe Rice with BiteMeMouthGuards.com. Best mouth guards in the business. Check them out. Truly changing the game. Truly creating greatness. On that note, I'm going to take us out with a little bit of the Young King again. I like this guy. 2017 Breakout Artist of the Year. I know I share him a lot, but you know what? Sharing is caring. On that note, have a good day. And God bless.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Yo, yo, yo. That's what I'm talking about. My young boy up in the booth. We get ready to kick it live.
Whip on, might get deported. Bitch me alive, less than anointed. Protest at 111 recorded. Clock struck 12.